Hey, Bill and Gunn, welcome to Blackball Tribal Edition. Murmu here with you today, and we've got the all-star lineup. We've got Yirrlim, Ginyara and Bumi, of course, is heading to the office as we speak, but we're going to start the show because, of course, time doesn't stop for anybody. We're going to have a yarn about welcome to countries and who can speak for country and all that kind of stuff because it was quite topical in recent days. And let's take a listen to, you might have heard about some of the Anzac parades and ceremonies being interrupted, and for those who are doing welcome to countries, there was one particular incident that made the news where someone was heckling or saying, what about the Anzacs, etc. Let's have a listen to that. And then also, we're going to be discussing that and a few other things. So let's just take a listen to the incident first. So that took place there last week, and also there's been a barrage of responses from, let's say, non-Indigenous people, white fellas. But you know, on either side, for and against what took place. So let's take a listen to both sides here. You'll find the comments interesting.
Neo-Nazis, fuck off. I understand you're feeling emboldened and you think 2025 is your year. The media panders to you. Online content creators, my peers, often pander to you for clicks, engagement, your loyalty, which means they ultimately want your money. No one's calling you neo-Nazis. They're calling you hecklers and protesters that interrupted an Anzac Day war memorial service, interrupted an Indigenous bloke doing a welcome to country. It's Australia. Why do I need to be welcome to my own country? No matter what ceremony they perform for you, you'd probably whinge. Indigenous people could call it, enjoy your country. And the Caucasians will go, what do I need to be told to enjoy me country? This isn't the time or the place for it. They could call it, leave the country. And your smooth brain would definitely pop a f***ing aneurysm. Neo-Nazis, fuck off.
So that took place there last week, and also there's been a barrage of responses from, let's say, non-Indigenous people, white fellas. But you know, on either side, for and against what took place. So let's take a listen to both sides here. You'll find the comments interesting.
The welcome to country which took place before the Anzac Day dawn service deserved to be booed. A welcome to country implies ownership and guesthood, with the guests being Europeans and the ownership being Aboriginals. The reason that therefore makes it incompatible with the Anzac Day dawn service is that the Anzacs didn't go and fight for Australia thinking that it was Aboriginal land. They were fighting for someone else's land. No, they knew rightly that it was theirs, that Australia, the country they created, that the people to whom they relate today have maintained, it is their country, and to be welcomed to it is more than disgraceful. So this humiliation ritual of welcome to country deserved to be booed, because it's gone on long enough, and all the other means of communicating Australians' distaste with it have been exhausted. Only this sort of protest can confront it and generate the discourse we're seeing now, where veterans have openly come out and said, yep, it shouldn't be there. Some take offense with the act of booing at that service, but they should know that no one was booing the service, the ode, the anthem, the last post. They were booing this modern political addition, which is there to guilt white Europeans.
Okay, well, men, that was very, a very interesting series of events there. And but this keeps showing its head at different places. And Ginyara, it's far from settled, this business, because it's just going to keep going and going and going, because there needs to be true settlement, which has no end at this stage to the ongoing controversy.
Look, Kabuki theatre is meant to be ongoing. Kabuki theatre is one where it's they're trying to get a political message out to their own people. You know, it really is a joke, and it's a farce. I'm not saying Welcome to Country is a farce, but it's how it's being performed, who's doing it, what's going on, you know. And this is Australia trying to appease Australians, and they got no right to be doing that. Now, under traditional protocols, which is what I talk about from before, traditional protocols is where a very senior lawman would welcome someone into their country, into their territory. What would happen in the Yidinji case, for example? Say you're coming in from the west, you know, because you couldn't get in from the east unless you come by boat, but come from the west, you know. So say Kukujungan was coming in or Kunjan was coming through their country into our country. They'd actually stop at the border. They knew where the border was. They'd actually pull up there and they'd get a white cockatoo feather. And they'd send a runner in with this cockatoo feather saying, can we come in? Are we welcome in your country, yes or no? And they wouldn't give it to a boy, for example. You know, a boy wouldn't be able to say yes or no, you can come in, or a lad. You know, these younger people who like to think they're somebody, no more. A senior lawman for that area, for that clan, had to say, yes, you can come into our part of the world. You know, yes, you are welcome in, or no, you're not. And if they come in when they're not welcome, they would have got the treatment. You know, there was literally life and death involved in this, trespassing and doing all that sort of stuff there. So it had to come from a senior lawman to welcome someone in. But he had to be in capacity, by the way. And something I'll say now, in Yidinji, and, you know, it doesn't apply to all the mobs around Australia, but in Yidinji alone, the women do not speak for country. This is men speak for country, and men actually do the welcome, you know, would welcome someone in. So we're talking about Yidinji Pacific now. So that's how it did operate. But they had to be proper Yidinji men of senior law status. They weren't just some boy who claimed to be someone. They had to be proper status and proper standing. So it's capacity and standing, who you are and what you are. So I look at this stuff going on in Anzac Day. You know, look, it is a bit of a shame that probably most Australians don't understand what's going on. The Australian government is refusing to tell them what the current state of play is on the country. They're not giving full disclosure to how they got here. They know it. They know they don't have the right to be here. They know that they're trespassing on someone's territory. They know that for a fact. And it's a sad state of affairs that they are putting these people up to do welcome to country. Now, I hope the old bloke who did the welcome to country on Anzac Day had proper standing and capacity, and he wasn't there as an Indigenous Australian. Because Indigenous Australians, just like Chinese Australians, just like Pauline Hanson, she's an Indigenous Australian. She really is. All Australians are foreign. All Australians. Legally.
Legally. She's an Indigenous yes. Australian legally.
And it's the word
under
Hanson.
Their law.
Yeah, under Australian law, because her identity is created pursuant to Australian law. Just like, you know, an Indigenous Australian, their name is created or their identity is created pursuant to Australian legislation, Australian law. And all Australian stuff is trespassing. They're here without other belligerent occupants. They shouldn't be here. So I hope the bloke that did that welcome to country down there, you know, was of proper standing and capacity or not, and not acting or being seen legally through the Indigenous Australian to which, you know, there's money being paid. You know, Australia is giving these some sort of compensation to go and do this welcome to country. Hang on a sec. What name's on the bank account to where the money goes? Is that an Australian name on that account, or is that a proper tribal name? Because if you're a proper tribal, you can't get an account opened up in tribal name. You can make believe it is, but it's not. It is not a proper name that's recognisable legally inside Australia. So the account that is opened up is opened up by an Australian. So they're paying Australian money to the Australian to do welcome to country. But hang on, this is not Australia's country. This is the tribal people's country, and they should be saying yes or no, you're welcome in, or no, you're not. And this is the important part.
He can switch positions between cultural and Australian identity?
At the drop of a hat, but he can't be seen in both at the same time. He can't be both. Now, when they introduce him, you know, welcome to country, oh, well, this bloke's going to give welcome to country, what name do they use? Do they use an Australian name? Because if they do, that person, that legal identity, has no right to welcome in anyone to trespass further on the territory of others because they're Australian, they're trespassing as well. This is the crazy part about it. It's all about legal standing and capacity. So when I talk about Yidinji stuff, now there are other nations that aren't patriarchal. They have the women can speak for country. But here in this part of the world, men speak for country. Now, there was a determination, not native title. This was stuff determined by Yidinji at the time going back 2011 or 12. Determination was made by the elders. This is not some gammon make-believe native title inside Australia rubbish. This is proper elders meeting together, and we had all the mobs together, and they all signed off on the determination, women do not speak for country. That's the men role here. The men have to do it. And I was actually, I was talking to a Yalanji woman there only a couple of weeks ago, and she said, yes, we agree, Yalanji is exactly the same. Cooker Yalanji, men speak for country. They got to go and defend the territory. When there's an argument going on, the men defend the country, not the women. Women have a role, but not in defending the land. So this is the important part, you know, about welcome to country. Who actually give that welcome to country down there? Was it proper standing and capacity? Because if it was proper standing and capacity, they wouldn't be taking money. They can't take money because they can't put into an Australian account. They're not Australian. So they should be in their proper capacity doing this, you know, the right way. And this is what Welcome to Country is all about.
Yeah, it's a interesting area because really it's all fictitious. But it's believable because, you know, money's real for some people. And that game is a very real game to them. It's all in their mind. But the problem for, I guess, that we're trying to address here with the Sovereign Indigenous Government is the piece of paper that is fictitious was created by the elders and by the men in particular to sign off on. And this is what you're talking about in 2012. And that has a greater standing than any other foreign entity or genealogy or whatever it may be. Now, everyone knows that as the foreign minister for the Sovereign Indigenous Government, we get permission from the elders to do that. My dad is not Yidinji. I can say that absolutely clearly right now. I know who my father is and my blood doesn't lie. And I know whose father is Bumi's father, for example, through genealogy and maps and all those things. So I'm not going to pretend that I can talk for tribal law because I can't. However, if the tribe asks me my opinion on something, I will give them an honest opinion, and they better not ask me the question that they don't want an answer to, because I'll tell them the truth. I can't mislead them. So this is a very important protocol that needs to be reinforced. Murumu, that piece of paper, is 100% backed by the Yidinji Nation. It is there to represent the Yidinji Nation because Australia cannot represent the Yidinji Nation. Hey, Bill and Gutton, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. Murumu here with you today as we broadcast right across the planet today, thanks to our friends at Bumabipra Media at 98.7 FM, the Yidinji Broadcast Service. And if you're listening outside of the Yidinji Territory, it's probably via the National Indigenous Radio Service in Australia, which goes to all the majority of the capital cities and I think the Peckham Network and a few others around the place. And we hope you're doing well wherever you are listening, and I hope this information is valuable to you. We've got Bumi, the Chief Minister, and one of the Chief Elders here, the Yimoyburra Wallaburra Mob, and Ganyara from the Tablelands Mob here also. And, well, I just wanted to say good morning and good afternoon, or wherever you are listening to this program. Bumi, how are you going today?
Yeah, good. Good, son. And,
Ganyara.
Beautiful weather, eh? No matter how much wind or blowing, it's beautiful weather.
It's a little bit cold for my liking, but that's okay too. You know, there's other people down south that are probably wearing snow boots and fur caps and everything else. Ganyara, we might have a good yarn there about a few things, but Bumi first, what's important for you this week coming up? And I know that you might be heading to Bilma to meet some people and other few things there. Yeah. That's something that you want to do in the next few months, is actually go and talk to a lot of the other elders to get them on board with Yidinji Nation and the government.
Yeah. I want to go over Yarraba and talk to the Yidinji people over there and straighten them up a lot, and, you know, in the sense that, yeah, I want to have a meeting with them, all the Yidinji lot in Yarraba. Probably go down Bungie there, the other lot, the other 4 mile there, and see Lloyd 4 mile, the eldest one. He's a brother to me, and he stayed there. He knew his rights. You know, his father and mother, and just like all of us, but we same, but we different, like in this way, like that traditional way, and it's a strong hold on us, and to see native title, they want you to fight with them there in front, but we're not going to let that happen. We in charge ourselves with sovereignty, you know. Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things going on at the moment. Yeah. Like Israel is under attack, and there's wars everywhere, Russia, Ukraine. It's really important to unite the tribe now,
because
it's all about getting together and working together through this now, because We don't know what's going to happen in the world, but we have to make sure that this place remains the same as it was before the white fella came here, British people come. And now, even now, we have to look after everybody here.
Yeah.
But having a united tribe as well as getting them to understand what we're doing is very important.
Mm. Yeah, it's a very thing that we can say is, well, you know, it's hard, but you just got to all, you know, come in, you know. We never know what'll happen, you know. I don't trust this fellow, this Trump, and they're full of trigger, they're full of bombs in their mind, you know. And all these fellas on the seat now. We never been like that Aboriginal people in Australia, that the islanders, we looked after the water, the land, you know, and, you know, you can take me away from Australia, like you say, but you can't take Australia out of me, you know, and all that love from this big island we are now, Australia, you know. Yes. Giving me the things sometimes, I can't sleep when all these things goes on with these bombs and, you know, aeroplanes falling down. And yeah, so we've got to be alert now. And it didn't do a lot that we could stand up, you know, to really help, you know, because the old people put all this language out and, you know, they didn't ever do the thing for nothing. They want us to look, see good stuff now. And yeah, right.
Well, the thing is that, let's say if Trump was to come here, he got to do it the Yidinji way.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter who they are.
Mm.
Australia, America, China, Britain, anyone, they have to come back under the Yidinji way.
That's right, yeah. Thank you for that, Admiral.
Mm. And I think that's a very important thing, Kanyara, that it doesn't matter who's here and they can't just use the Yidinji Nation as a piece of paper or to chuck it away like a razor blade or something like that.
No, they can't be like Australia. What Australia's doing through native title, like woman just said, this is not native title stuff. This is not land council stuff. Australia want the Aboriginal people to fight and argue and squabble and do everything wrong to each other, stuff they didn't do many years ago before the Europeans come. They sort of had set rules and regulations and laws, you name it, and they lived by it. And that's why it was so important. You know, Yidinji's big mob, you know, not just one little mob sitting in the middle of Cairns or on the tableland or whatever. Yidinji was big. And it encompassed big mobs, and I want to call them cantons, you know, like family area, family group. And they all worked together. And there were very superior lawmen involved in that everyone respected. And something a lot of people don't understand now, especially if they're going down the native title road and all this, talking about connection to country and how you're connected and all this. But they're missing the important stuff is who has the right to do certain things. And, you know, they call that laws, you know. Why were these elders like Bumi, you know, why is he a superior elder down here? Why is he the most superior elder in this good city? You know, we call it Gimoy, they all want to call it Cairns. But why? Why was that? Because them laws were handed down from generation to generation for thousands of years. And so then you've got an Australian come along and they want to make fight, you know, they want to make, so they stir them all up, stir up, oh, you're connected just as much as what he is. Yeah, you may be connected, but you don't have the lawful authority to talk the way he does, talk about stuff. So, you know, this is pretty hard to get into the mob, you know, to talk to them about identity. Where did your identity come from? You're going to go do native title. You want to go and do a native title in the Australian court. What identity? Where are you going to use the Australian identity? Because like everyone keeps saying, in Mabo determination, Koike was totally different. He couldn't be seen in the court, but Eddie Mabo could. So Mabo was their creation. It was created under Australia's sovereignty. So, you know, that was, and it was the Uluru Statement come out in 2007. He said, oh, there's many sovereignties here. There's coexisting sovereignties between the Aboriginal people and Australia. And so we're going now into the world of sovereignty that Uncle just mentioned, Bumi just said about. You've got to come in under our sovereignty. Well, if you come in under the sovereignty of the Yidinji Nation, you got to respect the Yidinji laws, you know. And if Donald Trump turns up here, he has to respect that very law there, because I think it was in one of the United Title determinations done in Australia, they said Yidinji has its own cosmological narrative. I wonder what that means. That's equivalent to the Bible, because Israel's got their narrative and the US have their narrative and Australia's got its. But they said Yidinji have its own cosmological narrative, and that is what Donald Trump, the man, you know, that man with the blonde hair all flash up, he would have to respect Bumi here, when he comes on to Cairns, by the way, and people don't realise this, that airport sitting out here at Cairns, in Cairns, whose country is that? Which of his family sold it off? No one. And that's why when I asked, you know, you say, Bumi, is this your country? You go, yeah. But did they ask to put an airport there? So when Donald Trump lands, he's not only landing on Cairns Airport, he's landing on the Gimoi Airport, the one that all his ancestors have controlled and owned since time immemorial.
Well, Colin, I know that you said that Dad and that went from Jungara to Bilma or to Yarrabah, but the airport is very important, and I wanted to let people hear from your story about what you used to do there as a young fella around that airport space, about that's your country.
Yeah, about Wrigley, yeah, the airport that Dad took us out, you know, me, Anthony and Albert. We went to Wrigley with Mum, and he was talking about where he's from and what happened there. But we didn't realise that sort of thing, we wanted to go, you know. But now when I hit about 30 or 24 or something like that and went back again, and it came to us then, see, when we've been taught from the health people that where they're from and where they've been camped, it's really hooked onto us, you know. And Daddy got shot in the toe there, Charlie Hyde. And Dad, when his wife was there, they told us about his true story, not a dream type, as blood was coming out of his foot, you know, all this and that, and they've been chased. And it's a hurting thing for us because I covered up a lot of times, you know, and didn't want to talk about it, you know. And yeah, so I go out there now and then. I don't see our track, but I see some old pad there, but I got to cover them up, you know. And when I take people for a walk, take a little broom and dust it away, you know. So, that airport means a lot to the Hyde family. You know, what happened there, the living and Red Lynch, you know. There's a picture there at where you go shopping. That must have been about 24 then. And, it means a lot to us, the Dingy people. Yeah.
And did you used to go hunting and around that place? Do you remember? Or?
Well, we've done a little bit. We camped it up a bit more, and I think there was a barrack there. Charlie used to work there, and he used to do the cane, and Dad used to do the cane too. But I wasn't in the well when Dad did that, but coming through now, we're like 14, something like that there now, we used to go for Bandicoot, you know, to make the trap. Yeah.
And that's why you probably like jumping on the plane and going flying around all the place.
Yeah, flying around, yeah.
Ganyara, obviously, you know, when you hear stories like that about the means of subsistence for the Yidinji and how those places are very, very significant in terms of cultural significance, it's something you're not going to read about in the State Library of Queensland, for example. Hey, Bill and Gutton, welcome to Black Law Tribal Edition. We're joining you from wherever you are listening to this program. I hope you're doing well. We've got Ganyara, Yirrlim, and myself, Murumu, here in the Yidinji headquarters. Bumi is coming in later on today, but I don't think he'll be making it for the show. So we're going to be moving forward with, talking about sovereignty and a few other things that are happening around the world. Obviously, it's a bit interesting with what's going on in the Middle East and elsewhere. There's lots of news, not just in the Middle East, but obviously the dominant narrative is coming out of there and the US. But Ganyara, some interesting times ahead. I think it's very important now for the tribal nations to come forth with a solution and a remedy to show the rest of the world how fallen they've become, and to actually try and bring some peace and security to the whole picture.
Well, quite obviously we've got to do something, because what's been out there at present hasn't really worked, has it? You know, the world has been in turmoil and argument. And you know, look, Yidinji remain neutral as a tribal nation. We've got to remain neutral out of all this, because, you know, what you see going on in the Middle East over in the Balkans or whatever, you know, in East Europe or West Russia, whichever way you put that, that's all UN member states, you know. So we got to remain neutral out of this. But remember, within all those UN member states, there are tribal nations that were there before the UN member state was created. And, you know, that's sort of where we got to step up to the plate, because we've come back to do the right thing according to the laws that haven't been ceded and they're not extinguished. And a part of that is to ensure that safety and security applies for all people. And I won't say persons here, because this is in the world of real now, the real tangible thing. You go and see a man or a woman or a child walking around, that's the real deal. They aren't persons, they're people. And, you know, as part of the doctrine, you know, that Yidinji have always had as their cosmological narrative, is that life of people is very precious and it shouldn't be taken very lightly the way it's used now. So we've got to step up to the plate and start to offer solutions to what we see as issues that may have effect on us, you know, because if what's going on in the Middle East or even in the Ukrainian-Russian war, argument there, whatever it is, that there are nuclear facilities that can be hit or struck and release radioactive material into the atmosphere, which somehow, with all the way the world operates, you know, the physical world, it'll end up down here or it ends up in the water that ends up in our fish, you know. So we've got to be very aware of all this. We're not sitting out here on our own in some little faraway part of the world. This is just the ball we live on, and what happens over there affects us here. So we've got to step up to the plate and start to offer solutions.
Yeah, and for the flat earthers out there that are listening, you know, it's not necessarily a ball if you don't want it to be a ball. But you're a little bit, I guess, the most important thing that Gnara just said there is about the value of life, and even when you think about how supermarkets and everything else get their meats and vegetables, a lot of it is done at speedy rates, unnatural, let's say, can be. But they're the things that we need to bring back into that line from a sovereignty point of view. It is about food sovereignty, about how to work well with nature, for example, how to do things as natural as possible without, you know, getting too much into additives, chemicals, this, that and the other. And unfortunately, I think the world's sort of gone a bit little silly on that, but there's always a way back, and sometimes nations like the Yidinji Nation can offer that real stability and knowledge when it comes to actually living with the environment and working with it.
Yeah, of course. You know, the world's unfortunately focused on profits over people, and you know, it's that well-being of people that is the most important thing before we worry about profits. You know, there really should be a world, you know, so you said you do it the Yidinji way. It would be a world where everybody has access to the highest quality foods, not the lowest quality because that's all you can afford. You know, the whole Yidinji system of supporting its people and people working within Yidinji Nation would allow that to happen and move away from this profit-based narrative, which is, you know, there's nothing wrong with making a profit, but when it comes over the well-being of people, it's a little bit off track. So yeah, the Yidinji obviously brings that well-grounded, moral-based approach to what's important in the world.
Yeah, Gnara.
Well, do people who don't understand this, you know, that we've talked to, do they deserve the highest quality material goods, you know, of the nation if they don't support the nation? You know, I'm not being nasty to say they don't deserve food, but people, you know, that understand the real position of Yidinji, that we're back at a tribal level, and they've refused outright, no, I don't support that, I subscribe to the belief of Australia, you know, that's where my money is made, that's where my life is, that's where all my stuff is, you know. So what's going to happen to people like that? You know, and that when it comes a time when the material goods, you know, are withheld because of issues such as the supply of oil, for example. You know, if oil doesn't get to Australia or fuel doesn't get to Australia, how do the goods get from down south up to here? You know, there's all these supply chain issues that Australia will face, you know, and this is part of our world. And then do those people, and they don't subscribe to the Yidinji way, do they have the right then to take more material goods off the Yidinji nation to which it doesn't subscribe? You know, this is just so crazy. I would like to be able to sit down with people and say, look, this is how it operates, and this is where you've got to be, and you've got to support us. Because I keep saying to everyone, where's Australia's territory? Where's its homeland? You know, we got our territory and our homeland. We know where we belong because it's always been here that way. It's been forever and a day, time immemorial. But the other ones who Johnny come lately, who don't believe in us, think that we're trespassers on our territory. You know, they're the ones that are really the belligerent occupants on our country. So when you look at trust law and all that sort of stuff there, you know, as Julia Gillard said, we hold this place in trust for sovereign people. Who are those sovereign people? Are they the Australians who are the belligerent occupants on our territory? Or is it the Aboriginal people whose land that Australia settled upon? You know, I'm not trying to remove the importance of all people getting good food. But if you don't believe in what we're doing or what we're subscribing to, about trying to settle the past and secure the future for everyone for not one Australian dollar, we don't want their money. We're doing this for nothing, for free for them, to get access to some of our product, you know. But this is what I'm saying. Do they deserve it once they know this and they don't want to support it?
Well, it's a very good question and one that we've been asking, you know, and thinking about for a very long time. The most important thing that the Yidinji Nation has is this long-lasting covenant. And when we talk about that, we use the same thing between the Creator and the Yidinji Nation, for example. So the Creator gave this piece of land and dominion to the Yidinji Nation and to the people. And, you know, he gave the Anglo-Saxon theirs and Greeks and Persians and everyone else their own territories. But here, you know, less than fewer than 150 years ago, let's say, the Yidinji Nation came across the belligerent occupier, which is today turned into the Commonwealth of Australia, State of Queensland, whatever it is. And as we have said here, it's not against that really. It's more about how can we work together to make things better. And that's always been the way.